The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode number 11 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is Mandy Godone, founder of Moxie and Stars, a hub for girl-positive clothing, books, and gear, and Be Bold Studio, a web development agency helping brands find their unique voice. We discuss her long and winding road to and through the tech startup world, the effect of story and the power of why on a business's development and success, gender diversity or lack thereof in the tech and startup environment, and the importance of taking time to save time. How long have you been in Boulder?
Oh, basically the beginning of 2002. So I'm an official transplant.
And what brought you here?
You know, originally it was environmental work. I have a degree in environmental policy, and I moved out here to pursue a master's degree in sustainable development. So things have shifted a lot for me since then, but it was a great place, didn't want to leave it, and after a while got caught up in the startup scene.
And so you came here for the environment, and now you have a new business called
Yes.
Moxie and Stars?
Yeah, very, very new, yes.
As we were just speaking, the website launched yesterday, so that's pretty new.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I did a soft launch 2 weeks ago through my network and to test out, you know, because there's always glitches, there's always things you don't see because you're too close to it, and to test response. And this morning, I got a message from my mother, actually, saying, I can't buy this thing, and so there's a serious glitch in the product line for my design shirts, but... these things happen. You got to roll with it.
So what is Moxie and Stars?
Moxie and Stars is a hub for girl positive products that I curate from around the web. And it includes a line of fierce t-shirts for girls roughly from the age of 5 to 12 is my target. But we go younger and a little bit older too. And they're all about encouraging, well, courage, intelligence, boldness, and creativity.
And what was the inspiration for Moxie and Stars?
Well, I have four nieces from the age of basically 4 now to 22, and was also part of this amazing little girl's life who, the nutshell was I would struggle to find things that I wanted to give them. There's tons of princess and pink and ruffles, but I'm always looking for something that's engaging them in a different way. And, you know, I'm in tech and I work in empowering women and getting more women into leadership. And I just felt like there's this real disconnect. I wanted to get different kinds of products and they just weren't there, or I had to look really hard to find them. So one thing led to another. I started just designing some shirts for Luna and her little brother. And then I really enjoyed the process and people kept saying, ooh, I like that. And so it snowballed into, well, why don't I create a place where people can just go and find, you know, 100 or 200 awesome products, books, gear, clothing that awesome girls would want to wear. So that's what it is.
When we were talking earlier, you mentioned that this was kind of a side hustle for you, that you have another business.
Yes. Yeah, that one pays the bills, although I technically stopped taking on clients for 4 months because I know myself well enough to know that if I have a client, if I have clients, I give them so much of my attention, this would have gone on the back burner and maybe never made it. So, but the other business is Be Bold Studio and Shiftco, and I focus on branding, culture crafting, and story with young companies. So helping them to figure out who they are, why people should care, and how to create a business that people want to be a part of.
And how did you get to that from working
on environmental issues.
Some really interesting leaps. I have this habit of plugging along and then getting fascinated by something and jumping. So I was in environmental work for quite a while, and that led into some nonprofit work. And in those areas, you're usually tasked with multiple things. And I've always had an artistic background, and I'm in tune with, you know, what people are drawn to. And so that manifested in other ways in marketing and design and copy and things like that. And ultimately jumped into startups and did a coding program and launched my own company in brand and web development. And honestly, it was just one of those, I should say this, I had a regular job. It was not a bad job. But the thought I kept having was, how do I get ahead doing this work? And how do I feel fulfilled? And the answer kept coming back, like, you're not going to get it here. Like, you've got to take some really big moves. And I really enjoyed coding, but not enough to do it 40 to 60 hours a week. And so I looked toward my strengths, which was design and brand. And so launched my own company and immediately had clients and immediately was making more than when I was doing the regular job. And I took that as a note from the universe to be bold. And that's the name of my company.
With Be Bold, you help companies tell their story.
Yes.
Talk about the place of story in tech, because you might think, oh, I've just got this really cool product that everyone needs.
Yeah.
Isn't that enough?
Oh, my God. I've been on both sides of this where I was. So branding is a lot like when you tell someone else's story, it tends to come easily. When you tell your own story, it can be really hard. So I also had a tech startup. We raised funds, and I learned really quickly that for me, being that kind of founder with venture backing was not my path. I've got my own trajectory. But telling our own story for our own companies is really hard. I can't tell you how many founders come to me, and they're like, we do this, and we do this, and we do this, and we're all these things, and I don't know how to simplify it. And they don't, because they're in the weeds, and they want it to be all things. And so you have to just really help them to hone that down to, well, what's the why? Why do you exist? Why should people care? It's not even the what is nice, but people, they don't connect with what. They want to connect with the story of how it's relevant to them and why they should care. And getting people there to that seed of why you exist is the powerful place. And then helping them to tell that in a way that people can connect with is the fun. I think we're also always afraid of potentially offending. Like, will this message put some people off? And unless you're Walmart, you want some people to be like, oh, that's totally not for me. And you want other people to totally gravitate to it. So if you're not creating a push and pull, you're not saying anything. And Walmart can say nothing because they're trying to appeal to a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's my distinct style is generally more a little bit of brash, but with heart. So it's getting back to the heart, the values, the meaning. Yeah.
This all really resonates with me personally, because I hear a lot of what I'm doing in what you're saying as far as taking a leap. Mm-hmm. And I had a startup that didn't last very long for a number of reasons, mm-hmm. none of which I think had to do with what we were actually doing, because the 3 dozen people who knew about it loved it.
Right. Yeah.
So one of our big challenges was we didn't have any funding or any money. Right. So it's really hard to market and get the word out when you don't have any money. And then there was also just the, like you were saying, just the reticence of really, even though this was in many ways a culmination of what I've been doing for most of my adult life.
Yeah.
I still had a really hard time owning it and presenting it as an extension of me.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrifying. And I think for anyone who's launching something that is theirs, like I figured out one of the ways I frame it is, I love this so much and I want it to exist so much, I'm afraid I'm going to fail it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find myself doing tiny acts of sabotage. Like, that's something I have to address in myself, where it's like, oh, I'm slowing myself down. I'm slowing this down because part of me is terrified I'm going to fail this idea that I want to exist so badly. And it's hard to put your baby out there. It is hard to to be vulnerable in that way, because it is an extension of something you want so much. So I totally right. hear that. And if honestly, if anyone had asked me a year ago if I'd be doing another startup, I would have been like, Can I say it?
Yeah. Sure.
Like, fuck no. Like, I don't know what our audience is. Yes. Tech, so it's probably fine.
Yeah.
But honestly, it was not the Walmart audience. Freaking way. But when you have the idea that just won't go away, and like, I had a really hard year last year in a lot of different ways. And I'm not going to go into that part of things, but I needed something simple, clean, and that felt good. And this hit all of those. It hit things I love doing, creating. It hit doing something good in the world, empowering little girls. Like, it's really hard for me to find someone's like, oh, that's terrible. Like, why would you do that? You know, it's like, so I feel good about doing it. And I was willing to take the risk to not get paid for, I was originally thinking 2 months, but we're going to get closer to 6 months very soon.
So what would you say to that startup or that person mm-hmm. setting out on a new venture who is running into that wall, which is essentially themselves?
Themselves. Yeah. I'd say that's 100% normal. There are anomalies. Like, the people are, I don't know if fearless is the right word, but I have a few friends in my life who I watch them and I'm just, they're fearless in a way that I hope to emulate and get closer to. I do think sometimes it takes practice. First round, don't be hard on yourself. You're going to fall. You're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. And even the people who have had rock star startups, like the ones that you read about, they can also bite the dust in their next run. There's so many variables. So be kind to yourself. And if it's your first run, find people to talk to. I mean, it's really easy to want answers, and that's not really why you should go to other people. It's to get perspective and then to question your assumptions, because when it comes down to it, you're the one who's going to have to decide. And you might also get a bit of mentor whiplash, because you're going to get different perspectives, like you should do this or you should do this. And the whole job of you with your idea is to navigate this and be like, well, that was a good idea, but I don't like this approach, so maybe I'll spin it this way. And don't be afraid to tell people. That's like, for me, one of the hardest things is to, I mean, it's the only way it's going to live. It's basically putting yourself out on the platter. Like, I believe in this, and it's really scary to take that step, at least for me. So yeah, talk to people. Here's the other one. I cannot tell you how many founders I've worked with or known who, and myself, where you feel like you have to be so positive. Like, oh yeah, things are amazing. We're kicking ass. We're taking names. Like, that kind of energy. So usually I'll stop the young ones when they're doing that. I'll be like, I hope it is exactly like that. But I've been there. And I know that in the same day, you can have the highest high and the lowest low. And that can happen pretty regularly. If it's hard, it's okay. And you don't have to tell me the hard stuff, but please tell me you have at least three people you can be totally honest with about what you're going through, the good and the bad, because mm-hmm. you absolutely have to have that. Otherwise, you feel 10 times as alone.
Yeah, I sort of felt, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty balanced. I know that it's not always the highest high. In general, my theory is that if things are going well 80% of the time.
Yeah, you're doing pretty good.
You're doing pretty good. You're doing really well. But in a weird way, when the company that I started didn't make it after the first year, it really felt good to own that, actually. Mm-hmm. Instead of making up excuses or reasons mm-hmm. for it, I felt like, all right, we didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. But more than that, I learned, because it's my first shot at it,
yeah,
how much work I should have done but didn't do. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that. But ultimately, I felt like the idea was validated. Yeah. It's like, okay, it's cool. We didn't make it. Something else is going to happen. I've got other ideas. Yeah. I'm pushing in a different direction. And it feels better in a way. Yeah. And liberating in a lot of ways.
Did you feel like, so this, let me take on the role of asking questions. Did you feel like you were trying to follow someone else's model for how to be successful?
It started that way because the people that I started the business with had more experience mm-hmm. in traditional startup land. You get your MVP out there, mm-hmm. and then you raise your round and all that. And it didn't shake out that way. And when it didn't shake out that way, and that was a way that intuitively didn't really feel that good to me in the first place, but these were friends of mine and experts, and I'm not mm-hmm. knocking them in any way if they're listening. I love the experience. It was all a learning experience, but as the year went on and it was really more just me working on it, I've just felt like, you know what, I've just got to go with what I feel like is the right thing to do. Right. And maybe it was too little too late, or not enough to begin with, but it did feel more natural. Right. And it was just more interesting and more fun for right. me to do it that way. And I've got a lot to learn when it comes to business, but
yeah,
it felt good to be learning it and taking those knocks, as well as having a lot of really positive feedback. There was nothing that anyone said to me that made me think, nobody said to me, dude, this is stupid, you should right. get a job. So that felt good. And I'm just taking that and building from
yeah.
that.
Yeah. One thing that comes to mind is, as you're saying, this is like, I mean, I reached out to a supportive network. Where the rubber hits the road is when you start going broader and you just like, are people buying? Are they, what kind of feedback can you get from them? Because your initial round of friends and family and those people not raising money, but just checking out the product, they tend to be more gentle.
Right.
So, I think it's going to be really interesting getting this out in front of even more eyeballs. And for me, with Moxie and Star, it's just, what is the feedback? What is the experience for people? And with your product, it sounds like it would have been nice if you could have gotten it out to a broader audience.
Definitely, because my family and friends all dug it and said it was great and supported me. But then I was getting feedback from the few people beyond that circle that I was able to reach. Mm-hmm. And they were really into it and loving it also, and really sad when it shut down. And mm-hmm. so that felt good in a way. Like, okay. But I know what you mean. And there was even a part of me, because I was getting so much positive feedback about what I was trying to do, that there was a part of me that was like, I need some criticism. You know, I need someone to say, dude, this is.
I mean, it's good. It's good when you get that. Because I 100 people right now that I did the soft opening with, and really great feedback and one pushback. So really great supportive feedback. And one who I know, he's an angel. He's done startups himself. And he called it just the way, like, this is how it is. This is what my daughter thinks. This is in it. And some of it was, well, that's not right. And I was like, wait, no, this is the good stuff. This is the stuff I need. It's a different perspective. I think he's an outlier. Maybe not. I will discover. But his daughter, he says, we have no problem finding really girl positive things. That's never been an issue for us. And I'm like, well, that's amazing. And if that's true, then what I've created is, it's not necessary if most people have that experience. When you find those people who push back, they help you to think critically about, well, okay, am I approaching it right? Is the product actually landing? Are they an outlier? Or am I the outlier?
Right.
So fortunately, like, of the people who have engaged back, he's the outlier in the feedback I've gotten, where I've had other people who are parents or uncles or aunts being like, I love this. I can't wait to share it with this list of 200 people who are part of this organization I'm in. So like, having them say, I want to share it, when can I share it, mm-hmm. makes me feel good. But his feedback will have me go back through my site to see, like, am I messaging right? Is there something I should be tweaking here?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a different kind of product I should be introducing that maybe would appeal even to someone who's pretty happy with what they've been able to find on their own? So yeah, it's good stuff.
Talk for a minute about the role of women in tech.
Ooh, yeah.
We hosted a happy hour here at Dojo 4 the other night, and it was a great time.
Yeah.
And there were 80 people, and maybe of that there were 10 women.
Okay, so part of my life that I haven't mentioned yet is that I co-organize a group called She Says Boulder, and that's an international organization. But we actually have a really large chapter here in Boulder, considering we're up against like New York and London and Amsterdam. We actually have really amazing numbers. I think we have 1,600 women on our list. But the whole focus for Boulder is getting more women into leadership in digital. And we just did our startup event, which was awesome. And I mean, I can speak honestly from my experience. I was going to startup events, well, tech events, when there was only like one, which might date me a little bit. The new tech meetup was the one thing that everybody was really into. And I'd be in a room of like 200 people and there would be 5 or 10 women. And I do believe it's gotten better. I still think we have a hell of a long way to go. And in the culture work I do, like, all of the science and the research shows that diversity, diversity of perspective, whether that's through gender, race, sexual orientation, education, these are the things that diversity of thought lead to better companies and better decisions. So, I mean, I'm always pushing for greater diversity, not just women, but definitely more diversity of perspective. Like, I've known, this kills me, CTOs who say things like, well, I only hire from Stanford for technical roles. And I'm like, you know what? They're smart, but they've all been taught the same approach. And most of them probably come from similar backgrounds. You are building a team of mini-me's. Mm-hmm. So if you want a culture of clones, you're going to have it. And you're all going to go down the same rabbit hole together. It's going to seem like, oh, we must have a great idea because everyone's agreeing about it. But it probably means you're missing out on tons of opportunities or issues because you have the same thought process, right?
Right.
But rubber hits the road on this long, long way to go still. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't disheartened in my over a decade now in startups. Now, I might have been a bit bright-eyed and bushy-tailed when I first got into startups. I was like, this is the answer. We're innovative and young, and we're looking at the way we build companies as well as the products we build. We can make it any way we want. And then to be 10 plus years down the road and seeing even companies that I know the founders and I think they are amazing human beings, but seeing that their diversity in leadership, their diversity in their companies is really lacking, it becomes a real struggle to reconcile that. I think we've got a long way to go. We're starting to have some real interesting conversations. But yeah, it's a process. So I don't know, Moxie and Stars is a part of that for me too. It's like, if I can get the kids really excited about tech at a younger age to help them get through those early preteen to teen years, just to buffer that, like science is awesome. Coding is awesome. Like I have, I think like 5 different items that are specifically around like toys and coding and design and coding. So like, that's definitely a passion of mine. Like let's get them in that direction. But yeah, a long way to go.
Just the quick look that I took at your site before we started speaking today, it looks really cool to me. Like I'm immediately thought of my nieces who are right in awesome. Your target market. And one of them in particular is into like building robots and she's definitely kind of a cool geek. And so I just think it seems like you're onto something.
I like to think so. Thank you. Thank you.
But do you think this lack of diversity is, how much of it is people actively thinking only men can do this versus just blind spot?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So there's like, I could do an hour long easily talk just around the ways that it's never one thing. There's no silver bullet on this, right? Part is pipeline, but we also have serious issues within the companies themselves where women are going into technology and they're ejecting. And a lot of times in these exit interviews they do, only a small proportion are saying that it's because they don't like the work or that they're leaving because they want to have a family. A lot of them are leaving to go to a completely different industry or to start their own businesses in an overlapping industry. But that says a lot. Like I think it's twice the level of women are leaving technical roles as men. And that to me is an indicator of environment. Mm-hmm. And so we can work on the pipeline, but if the places they're landing in do not feel supportive, if they don't feel like they are included and have as many opportunities, of course they're going to leave. And it's going to create these more hostile experiences. One of my favorite comments from, well, he has so many, Greg Greenstreet over with Twitter now, is when it was GNIP, I asked him, what was the hardest thing about building up your diversity there, like gender diversity? And he just was immediate. It's like, the hardest thing was the first hire because we had this team of men, like so many guys. to get our first hire in was the hardest. And then the second hire was the next hardest thing. What he's done a great job of is building into the DNA of their company now, where it is something that multiple people are constantly on the lookout for talent. And, you know, so it's absolutely possible. And I believe their numbers are still quite higher than the rest of the Twitter offices as far as gender diversity goes and technical roles. Yeah, it's pipeline. You're in the ecosystem, in the environment you're in. It's leadership, which is a big part of the ecosystem. It's what I would call the subtle cues, the things that we don't even think about because, you know, if you've been working in a room full of guys, there's a lot of things that you say and it's like, haha, that's funny. But if you're not part of that gender or that race or whatever, it can feel exclusionary. One of my favorite examples of a microaggression that I have done and almost everyone does is say you're in a meeting and let's say Susan states an idea and you think it's a good idea. So you say something like, actually, that's a great idea, Susan. Your intention was to support. What it actually said was, surprisingly, Susan has a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's the message that's truly being conveyed. So those little things can have larger ramifications. The other one of like, just in general, women get cut off more. There's some interesting social dynamics at play, and identifying those with a little bit of bias awareness, subconscious bias, is helpful. But there's a whole nother thread on like subconscious, unconscious bias and what that could be. But let's not go there.
Okay. Right. Let me ask you just your thoughts on the Boulder tech and startup scene. What would you say is a or are the defining characteristics? Yeah. What makes Boulder different than other cities?
Okay. So I'm going to say first off, there's a double-edged sword in all things. And I might be a little bit more jaded than I would have been if we'd had this interview like 6 years ago. But a couple of things I love about the Boulder scene is accessibility. The community's tight and you can have meetings with people who, like if you were in the Valley or you were in New York, would be inaccessible just because of gatekeepers and this idea that, well, I'm way up here. If you want to meet with me, you've got to prove you're worthy kind of approach to business. Whereas you'll find people with office hours or a simple intro can at least get you a pitch deck in the right hands. The give first mentality is what a lot of people cite, but I've also seen the double-edged sword of the give first is that once you've succeeded, you've gotten, it's really easy to give. If you're early or you're constantly giving, it can be challenging. So I think there's also finding that balance in like, I want to give, but I also, there's that point where you want to connect with the community in a way where you feel like it's bringing it back to you, right? Mm-hmm. I know some people who are huge movers in our community as community movers and shakers who I feel like in some ways get overlooked because they're just assumed that's their role versus their other skill set. So I don't know, there's some interesting things at play there. But on the whole, the gift first mentality, I think, is a really great thing. And I certainly enjoy our environment way more than the realities I've seen on especially the West Coast. And that also goes for women in general in tech. Like the horror stories I've heard specifically from some of the women I know from the West Coast have maybe like, you're going to be treated way better. Come here. We're way more supportive.
What do you attribute the accessibility and just more openness and tight-knitness to?
You know, I think it's, well, one, we have lots of sunshine. I mean, they've got that in California, so maybe, but not so much in San Francisco. It's this whole approach to living in Boulder. If you're an entrepreneur and you can live anywhere, Boulder, Denver, this part of Colorado, it's beautiful. And there is a greater focus on taking care of yourself. We want to live good lives. So it isn't just the grind of the startup or the business. There's also an approach to living well and taking care of yourself and getting outdoors and being athletic. And I think that creates this whole overarching general level of happiness and openness. So I think it just kind of part of it is certainly like Bradfeld and that, you know, the early movers and shakers who are still a big part of our community. And them saying, this is the kind of culture we should have. And it's worked. They've planted these seeds and it's really grown out in a meaningful way. Yeah, I don't know. I go to Denver events and it could be just that I'm not as much, you know, it's Denver, it's a different ecosystem, but it feels more dispersed. It's still a great community, but I'm so embedded in Boulder and it's a great community to be part of.
Anything else you'd like to add about anything about Startup Week or your business or just thoughts on whatever?
Well, that's not broad. Anything else? A piece of advice? This one, it goes to startups, it goes to creatives. It's something I have worked to integrate into my life because the first run with this startup in tech, worked really hard, didn't take care of myself, pretty much hated life, and was happy to move on to another phase. One of the things I'm doing different, one, I built this company for me. I am not going for venture capital, certainly not to start. I just want to see, I'm doing my test run. I'm making sure that it has legs and have a plan in place to grow in a way that I'm comfortable with. It's like, follow your genius. What are you really good at? What are you passionate about? Like, that's so critical. I know people who just go after dollars, like this will make money. They may be able to get through the hard times with just that, but I think they're the rarity. You got to be in love with the idea. And then the second thing is doing nothing on a regular basis. It's really easy when you're in the grind to push, to try and push to a solution. And I experienced that with coding when you just like, you're trying to figure something out and you're pushing and pushing and pushing. And inevitably in creative work, in programming, in ideation, I find that the real solution is to take time to save time. So instead of pushing, step back, go for a walk, ride your bike, take a nap, take a shower, whatever it is for you to let your brain reset so that these subtle connections of your subconscious sort of push through. And that's when the breakthroughs always happen for me. It's not when you push, it's when you relax.
Right.
And it's also, you feel a hell of a lot better in your life because you're making time to take care of yourself. So yeah, mental health and physical health for sure. And if you know any awesome little girls and you want to get them awesome products, check out Moxie and Stars. MoxieandStars.com.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mandy Godon.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was great.
That was Mandy Godon, founder of Moxie and Stars. Check it out at MoxieandStars.com. Episode number 11 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Legal Track sponsor, Berg Hill Greenleaf Riskitti. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by EchoDeck, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at echodeck.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.